My favorite emotion is
crime.
Indecision.
Ah.
Yeah. See what I did there?
That's what I was going to say too. Yeah.
Is pausing for effect an emotion? It's my favorite emotion.
Is allergies an emotion?
Yeah.
Sneezing is an emotion, I think, actually.
Bed bugs. Mm. That's my favorite emotion.
Guys, I can very confidently tell all of you that in the time that we've spent away, none of us have gotten any funnier.
Well, we'll just have to find out. Well, hello. Let me do it again.
Hello, everyone.
Hang on.
Hold. On my tempo.
Hello, everybody.
Not my tempo.
It's okay.
Hello, but I bought in.
Nope.
Okay, all right. Just a little.
Right. Just relax.
That's fine.
Good morning, Joe Biden.
What? Okay.
No, I got this. I got this.
No. I think I can.
I earned the hosting part.
No.
I earned the hosting part.
Look, it is my part to lend the hosting part. James?
Hello, everybody.
Okay, it's Ryan.
Everyone, welcome back to From Under a Rock, the podcast where we pick a movie that one or more of us has not seen already and bring them out from under the proverbial rock.
And give them shit for it.
Oh yeah, undoubtedly.
Plenty of that going around as well. I am your gracious host, Ryan Evans.
The greatest.
I said gracious.
Oh, sorry. I heard greatest.
You may also remember him as NPR, I think was.
NPR Ryan.
NPR.
I am not the greatest yet. I do aspire to the greatest hosts.
To be
of
one
all
of the greats.
Mm-hmm. You're Johnny Carson.
Is that why you're breaking up with me? Because you don't think I'm going to support you? I'm going to prevent you from being one of the greats?
Oh, we're doing a different scene now. Okay.
Yeah. I'm jumping all over.
Oh, okay.
You're going to get whiplash from how jumpy I am.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Michael Ornelas, a.k.a. Mike Bourbon.
I'm Steven Zurita, a.k.a. Steuben the Burbs Suburban.
Correct? Well, but you have to say it betwixt your real name.
Steven Steuben the Burbs Suburban.
Plus your real
Zurita.
Last name.
Zurita the Jerk.
The Jerk, okay. Did not forget the suffix.
And I am James McAnally, also known as Jooms McDoodles.
Yay!
Yeah! We're back, guys.
We are back.
We are happy to be back. I can speak for myself when I say that. I am certainly happy to be back with you beautiful, beautiful gentlemen.
I'm on the positive side of the spectrum. I don't know if it goes up to happy.
Okay.
Right. Well, it's near there.
I'm like a 6 out of 10.
Let's work on you a little bit.
Yeah, let's butter me up,
guys. Work on those delts and shred those quads a little bit. Maybe by the end of the podcast, you'll be thrilled to be back.
Deltoids of compassion.
I have spent the time away getting very out of shape, so I like your suggestion of a workout.
Okay. But this isn't a podcast that's focused on working out. Am I incorrect in that assumption, or...?
Other than our sponsorship from water, stay hydrated.
Water, it's everywhere.
Some things never change. So, but that doesn't include us. We have, of course, changed quite a bit. We've been gone for a little while now.
Since I think July was our last episode, so that puts us at
July of last year.
At this very table.
It was the... Yeah. What was the last pick?
I think it was... Was it West Side Story?
West Side Story.
Yeah. It was James's pick, yes.
Yeah, it was...
So, Steven, what have you been up to since then?
Well,
let's not go over every little detail.
Let's see. That's like 8 months worth of stuff. No, I mean, okay, well, I'll just give you I'll catch you up. Big recap. I moved. I had a secondhand surgery. It's all better.
Give us a wave for the video portion.
We got this. You see this? Mm-hmm. That's my newest trick. If you can't see, by the way, we have a video portion. So if you're listening to this, go to the Hyperdrive Pictures YouTube page. You can actually watch snippets of this, so you can see what I'm showing you. Because before my hand used to be like
bent,
this, and now it's like
but
that.
Only at such an angle. It's not quite as rigid as it was before.
But yeah, I saw Gwen Stefani at Disneyland like a couple weeks ago, if you want something super current.
Cool. Big highlight.
She was standing right behind me. I had no idea it was her because she was like dressed normally. But then when I heard like a girl squealing behind me, I looked around and I was like, oh.
I saw Fergie at a nightclub like probably 7 months ago, and that's pretty much the same thing. It's almost the exact same story. No, I mean, just we saw a female pop star at a place. So we had the same experience.
Yeah. But I got to be at Disneyland.
When this girl squealed upon seeing Gwen Stefani, did she squeal, "This shit is bananas"?
She should have.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Okay, true story. I was at like a frozen treat stand at Disneyland by like the lagoon.
Where they have the shit bananas.
Frozen bananas.
Oh, okay. I thought they were shit bananas.
I don't think she got one, though. I think she got like a lemonade.
I just assumed from that song that was her favorite fruit.
But I stuck around just to watch the transaction happen. And like as soon as she left, you know, she was trying to keep a low profile. So I didn't take pictures or anything.
A low pro.
I looked at the vendor, and he looked at me and goes, did that just happen? And I was like, yeah.
It's just Disneyland. Lots of people come here.
I can't believe I just served someone that I recognize. What?
I mean, they're serving Mickey Mouse all the time there. So
they now have her headshot up at that stand.
Yeah, but that's what's been up with me.
All right.
How about you, James?
Well, Ryan, I also have moved. And aside from that, nothing too crazy has been going on, you know, like moved to a new place in North Hollywood, which was nice, you know, and it's exceedingly loud. And I found one of my neighbors was a crazy lady who was screaming at my window the other day. I have a night shift job now, and so I'm trying to sleep during the day, and it's very difficult, especially when you have a cross street that is exceedingly loud. But for the most part, I ignore it. Well, one day I was trying to get to sleep, and there's this chick.
I like how you're proud of yourself for
for being able to. I'm trying to deal with it, you
Can
know.
You just tell us for our listeners, yes, what's the cross? What is the intersection?
What's your specific address?
What's the apartment?
The
unit
number, please.
Do we buzz to get in, or do we call
it's
you?
It's you know what? It's a gated community, and I'd really rather not give away that information. You know,
you don't live in a gated community.
That's true. I don't. But anyway, so there's this crazy lady that was just yelling Sanjay at my window every three minutes for half an hour. She was just just Sanjay. 3 minutes go by. Sanjay. 3 minutes go by. And I'm trying to get to sleep and I'm really pissed off. So I go over to I've got a blanket up. So I go over to the window and I like peer out and she sees me and she as if I was the one who was doing something wrong. She just goes, "Open the door. Like, open the gate."
Wait, was she looking at you?
Yes, straight at me.
Oh, okay.
And I was just, like, really tired. And I was just like, "Fuck off. Go away." And she didn't. And that was, you know, I'm not sure exactly what happened to her, so.
The same thing happened to me in my old place. And it's like, I'm not here to be the gatekeeper. This is my home.
Yes.
Why are you bugging me?
I was the one who was doing something wrong, apparently. Yeah. It was my job to open the gate. But aside from that, everything is as normal.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Michael?
Yep.
It's good to have you back, sir.
Thank you.
How have you been?
Still okay to be back, but we're working on it. Delts are feeling fine.
Okay. We'll shred those. We'll get those shredded in due time.
Do some shredding. I had a lot going on.
Shredded like the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Enjoyed a relationship for most of the year that just ended like 3 days ago. Yep, exactly my thoughts.
Our sitcom live studio audience is going,
cheering.
That one guy. And then on top, not on top of that, but her breakup came on the midst of me coming home from a funeral for my grandfather. Wasn't as bad mourning-wise because he passed all the way back in August, and now it is March. But they held him on ice, basically, because he was a World War II veteran. And he got buried in Arlington National Cemetery, which has a long waiting list.
Yeah, I saw a Snapchat of that. It was like a very solemn, very respectful. I looked at it and I kind of just like, I saluted my
Godspeed.
Phone.
Godspeed.
No, it looked like a really beautiful ceremony.
It was a really cool ceremony. Like they had like a little mass inside of inside the chapel there, and then we went outside. There were soldiers with like the riflery squad, and then a marching band. And they loaded him up on a cart pulled by horses. We walked like a mile and a half to the burial site. The marching band filed in up the hill, played for us as a sign of respect. They played taps. The most entertaining part of this whole ceremony, which made more than just me laugh, which is kind of funny, the idea of laughing while someone's about to be buried, but they did a 21-gun salute, and they had like the riflery squad line up, and they were kind of facing the marching band, and they go to do the 21-gun salute, and they take a shot, and my brother and I are like, holy shit, those are aimed like dangerously low, and we thought they were shooting at the marching band, and we it didn't occur to us that they were firing blanks. But it was a really cool service, and I honestly, it was even cooler the fact that we were so far removed from his actual passing that there wasn't as much grieving necessary. Mm-hmm. It was just we were able to be there with family,
celebration almost.
Yeah, so it was cool.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Very cool.
This podcast is now like a 6.5 for my excitement level. Working on up, man.
Did it go? Oh, it went up. Okay.
Yeah.
Ryan, what have you been up to?
I've just been sitting at this very table, you know, tinkering.
For 8 months?
Tightening screws, getting everything ready, because I knew we would be back.
And it's my place. Like,
that's a really strange thing.
You know, I see Michael as he goes off to work. Hey, and he's, you know, at first he was like, hey, how's the podcast coming along? And I'm like, it's... I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
I got a lot of work to do. But I knew we would be back someday.
Then I started hitting him and being like, leave at like every opportunity, and he didn't get the hint. And now my arm's being twisted to doing this.
Now don't you feel like an idiot?
No.
Now don't you feel like an idiot?
Anyways,
did we watch a movie or something?
Yeah, we watched a movie.
I did finally manage to bring you all back together to watch my favorite movie of last year, and my favorite movie in quite a few years, actually, Whiplash.
Hmm, right.
That's an interesting statement.
I will absolutely explain myself as we go along, but I'd rather hear first from Steven, who is the one who hadn't seen this one.
You were the only one.
So I actually watched this movie one day before all of you guys for scheduling circumstances.
Tape delay.
A lot
of cursing.
But it was it's weird to say fun movie, because it's kind of like the movie's about this emotionally abusive mentor. Teacher, but like all the emotions, like it was like I was along for the ride, and this movie has such everybody knows that this is the movie where J.K. Simmons just yells and abuses this poor kid. So going into this movie, I was thinking like, oh man, I kind of got to prepare myself. So knowing it's coming the whole time, you're just waiting for him to snap, because his first couple appearances,
he's pretty encouraging.
He's stern, but he's
he's stern.
You've got this.
He seems like he has a tight schedule.
He's nurturing.
Specifically when he takes him into the hallway before his first practice session.
He opens up to him like, hey, just relax. Tell me about yourself. I love the way
Musicians in the family? No. Yeah. Oh, you just have to pay attention to the grades.
And that whole thing is so like, my mom left and it's just me and my dad. And then he just, throughout the rest of the movie, takes that bit about his mom left. Like, oh, your mom wouldn't even stick around, to just like add to the abuse.
He uses
and,
as ammunition.
And that seems like his tactic. Like he opens up with everybody just to get under their skin. And
he wants to make his shots personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can be vague and be like, you suck at your instrument. But if he knows your backstory, he can rip you a new one.
With the core drummer, what was the original core drummer's name?
Tanner.
Tanner. It was his sexuality.
Yeah. Yeah, he
baked
pulled
Alaska.
No punches. Man, like I would say, oh man, teacher should really get fired for that, but it eventually does. But it's kind of funny because I guess he's just so good, although he said he never had a great... He has this huge reputation. You can tell the school just lets him do whatever. They know it's happening. Like he barges into another band class and the teacher immediately shuts up and he takes over the class, Fletcher does.
Can I chime in on that since I have a note about it?
Yeah.
Very unrealistic. I went to one of those types of music schools. You're set in a band for the semester, regardless of how good or how misplaced you may be. It's not going to change. Like there were a lot of just the technical side of the music school structure that this movie just ignored for the sake of drama.
So like the head teacher's not going to say, bump up to my class?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you didn't have a teacher like Terrence Fletcher, I would wager. Not to that degree of intensity. And the director...
My teacher refused to own a cell phone.
The director, if someone would... Is it Damon something?
Which, what character?
The director of the movie.
Oh, okay.
He said he very heavily based this movie on his real life music school experience.
Oh, okay. So, did he play drums?
I think he did.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Michael, you mentioned you said you've been to music school and we know you are a percussionist. Is that the correct term?
Yes, definitely interested in getting your specific feelings about this movie.
I have a very specific question that maybe you could clear up. I noticed that there's a core drummer, then there's an alternate drummer, mm-hmm. and then there's actually, at a certain point in the movie, a second alternate drummer. Every other instrument seems to just be one person in the band. Is that normal, or is that just something they did specifically for the movie?
So I never did jazz band, but based on my experiences watching jazz bands, the drummer wouldn't have an alternate during performance, during practice, because whoever would be alternate would just be in the lower band. They'd be in another level. They wouldn't be the second best drummer in the school and just sitting there turning pages. They would be in another band where they can actually play. So the reason I believe in the movie that they had only for drums was because, if you think about it, all the other instruments aren't playing throughout the entire song and could feasibly turn their own pages. With drums, you're pretty much always going. But, I mean, in the case of that, you just get enough music stands to where you can fit all the pages on it, or you memorize it. It's usually not that big of an issue. You don't need another person.
Right.
So.
That's interesting. But do you feel like that... like there was any, because you mentioned some technical stuff where it's like, oh, this wouldn't happen or that wouldn't happen. But do you feel like the overall tone of the stress was as potent as when you were a student of music?
I don't. What I like about the movie and about some of the plot points that I actually really dislike,
mm-hmm.
Namely being how callous he was when he broke up with his girlfriend. I didn't think even that was necessary. But, like, he made that decision because he just has this drive that is unmatched. And, of course, the most major example of that is dude gets broadsided by a truck, hops out, and goes attempts to play a concert. Mm. I hated that plot.
And thinks that he can somehow... I'm so surprised. I mean, he put himself in the chair. Everybody told him not to. But I'm like, dude, look in the mirror. Do you really think you're gonna go on and play? Like, wouldn't like the judges be like, hey, is that guy all right? We can take five. This seems to be like a special circumstance, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I did like concerts and stuff, your like appearance is a big thing that they stress. They're like, oh, Michael, go shave or you know, comb your hair. Like I got that note a few times. Your appearance matters. They're mm-hmm. not gonna let a blood-soaked drummer just get away with it, like. And yeah, they'll probably put on whoever's going next and give them half an hour to adjust or however long their time slot is.
Yeah.
People aren't unreasonable.
The world of the movie is definitely a little extreme.
It is.
But I, not to a point where I was saying, oh, this is so unrealistic. I was just, it made me more enthralled with it that they romanticized the world of jazz musicians a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It made it a little more intense.
You know, it definitely was, could be a little on the nose sometimes with his drive, but he also has a singular mind in the fact that he, you know, he plays with the idea of, you know, having a committed relationship and realizes that he can't do it. He doesn't have a whole lot of friends. His single drive throughout the movie is to be the best at Schaefer. The best that there ever was, yes, indeed.
I think scenes like that, like the car crash, actually separate this movie, keeping it away from becoming just, you know, another indie drama about this kid who wants to be a really good drummer.
Right.
Stuff like that, and just J.K. Simmons' character and his whole Oscar-winning performance, which, what did you guys think about him?
Oh, I loved him. There's a scene where, the very first scene where he's rehearsing with Andrew, you know, where he starts off like, all right, just play. Okay, not quite my tempo. That first scene, I love the way they played with space in that scene because he starts over on his own podium, and as Andrew messes up, he takes a couple paces closer and closer until he's right in his face. And again, knowing that this is the movie where this guy's just going to abuse him and berate him, you're thinking, oh, geez, don't get close, because you're going to like hit him or throw something at him. And just, I love the way his performance and the spacing, the tension builds so much in that scene. And then they do a really cool reverse of that where after Fletcher's been fired from the conservatory?
Yeah, conservatory. Yeah.
Fired from the conservatory, and he's playing piano at a jazz bar, and Andrew comes in and sees him. The camera kind of goes up close and close and close and close all the way up to the stage so you can get a good look at J.K. Simmons. And I thought that was his point of view. And I was like, oh, dude, is he just going to like walk up to the stage and punch him in the face? But then,
Not
my tempo. Bam. But then you get like a reverse and you see, oh, it was just the camera, not him. He's still by the door. But they just use really great moments like that to build the tension. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were the way it was directed, I thought was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. There are a lot of little things that I don't even know if they're accidents, but made it into the final cut that are very enthralling. Like, very small detail that I wrote down because it actually added so much to the moment for me. When Andrew is... The first time he has a chair thrown at him, they do that shot where the camera is on the drum set and Andrew, and you see him duck a little bit. Chair hits the wall behind it, and you can tell that it visibly made the camera shake. Like, either the camera was about to start falling over from that shot, or maybe they didn't post, whatever it is. But, like, just that, like, unhinging. And then they cut very quickly after the camera starts to fall over or move or whatever it is, but it added so much to me. And there's a lot of little things like that that I really like the way that this movie is presented.
Yeah, they did a lot with moving camera. I said it before, but like, it only moves when there's a significant emotional cue of some point.
Well, there's also the parallel that they drew when J.K. Simmons is talking about how Charlie Parker became such a famous musician was because he had a cymbal thrown at his head. Yeah. So it's kind of like that sort of parallel. And even the parallel between the car crash that Neiman goes through and the result or the death that J.K. Simmons' character claims Sean Casey's death. He says he dies in a car crash, even though he actually hung himself in his apartment. It's just very interesting that like, that they would choose the action to follow the dialogue in that way. And I really thought that it was kind of cool, especially upon a second viewing. You know, the first time around, I didn't really realize it.
But I didn't
watching
pick up
it,
on that.
Watching it the second time, you definitely are. And another thing I picked up the second time around was how much of a loser Neiman's dad comes off as.
Yeah.
You know, like the first time I was like, oh, he's just a nurturing, you know, loving father. And then like the second time around, you realize, oh, okay, I see why. There's this conflict there.
Yeah,
you know?
He doesn't quite know how to help his son either. He's like so above and beyond what he can comprehend musically.
Yeah, or just in success.
Yeah, we get the one scene at the dinner table to give us a sense that, oh, this family is kind of, in Andrew's mind, an underachieving family.
Yeah.
And
right.
That they settle for being captain of the
Third string football.
Yeah. Yeah,
football.
I thought it was. I thought that scene was so, it was so interesting to me. Just because of the fact that they were treating him as though the thing he was pursuing and amazing at was
a waste of time.
Was a waste of time, because people going into the arts often get that treatment from their parents. When I was in music, though, all my family was like extended family. Everyone would always ask about it and thought that there was a lot of promise, and clearly there wasn't. No, but like they were interested in it because it's different and it's not the stereotypical route that it seemed like the rest of Andrew's family took. And I thought it was so interesting to have that family dynamic that was so centered on being interested in what's normal or what's expected. And all of us, we went to film school, and I imagine that our family dynamics, I think, all were fairly supportive about what we were doing and interested in our projects and didn't treat us like we were an outcast for pursuing something that's a little more difficult to make it in.
I really love the line where one of his relatives says, judging music, isn't that subjective?
No.
And by that point in the movie, maybe starting the movie, I would have thought so. But by that point in the movie, no, it's very technical, especially when you see how technical J.K. Simmons is with his beats and tempo. It's crazy. But that scene does such a good job of raising the question, is Andrew messed up? Is Neiman messed up? Because you go again into this movie thinking, okay, Simmons is this horrible person, but then you say that Neiman's kind of messed up in the head too. He's completely fine with the idea of dying at the age of 34, but if he's remembered, but not having friends, that's a life that he thinks is the best case scenario. And it kind of plays into how he becomes this twisted guy. I mean, he like tackles and fights and punches Simmons around. And I don't know. It would have been a much more boring movie if he was just a very hopeful guy who wanted to be the best at music without those vices.
When he said that, when he talked about immortality, I would only think of like the old barbaric conquerors and the Alexander Greats of the world.
Right.
Alexander the Great.
Alexander Great.
There were so many of them, Alexanders.
Great. That was great Alexander, that one, yeah.
And so, then my great Alexander before him, my great Alexander.
Going back to, I'd like to go back to real quick, J.K. Simmons's character. Mm-hmm. And obviously, in an Oscar-winning performance, and I think he absolutely deserved it. Just the posture, the stature of this character, just walking in the room, you feel it. Just the way he carries himself. Not only the fact that he's like a physically very defined person, but also just like he carries with him this air of determination,
of grandeur. Like,
exactly.
And when he's conducting as well, you know, it's just the tiniest, most subtle minute little hand motions, but he's, you know, he's got his eyes closed, he's bobbing his head, and he's feeling it, and you can feel him feeling it.
Yeah.
He's very passionate about what he's doing, obviously.
And I felt you feeling him feel it.
I think we all felt everybody feeling it.
You also felt me, which I was just kind of weirded out by that. We were sitting next to each other on the couch.
I was going to say something, but I decided recently to let it just go, you know, just let it happen, see where it goes from there.
Well,
unfortunately, I was disappointed, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Michael, the other thing I wanted to get your input on was the editing and how the sound editing complemented it. Because, knowing your way around a drum kit a little bit, like I have some very rudimentary knowledge. To me, it seemed, for the most part, like pretty spot on.
Are you talking about like the audio visual sync?
How
like
a lot of movies will not even try to make their music and their editing match up.
Guys, can we talk about the best drumming movie ever, Drumline?
With Nick Cannon?
With Nick Cannon, yeah, of course.
I mean, we can talk about that someday, I guess.
This was, it was done so much better the first time I watched it. Mm-hmm. Because I was so drawn into the story and the acting. Second time I watched it, I noticed differences from performer to performer. Miles Teller did a actually very good, pretty convincing job of moving at the right times. There were still a lot of moments where I was hearing things that weren't lining up with what my eyes were seeing, and took me out of it a little, but it was a second viewing. On first viewing, I didn't notice that as much because they made a really strong first impression, like at the top in the early practices, they really hit it. So I guess they can get away with having a little bit more leeway later on in the movie when they're playing, because otherwise that's just a lot of focus on precision.
Well, there's also the occasional, you know, like you'll hear a tom or a snare hit when the drumstick's not there or something, you know, or like a crash.
One of the things that stuck out to me the most was when Tanner would play, it actually was not very convincing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a note that it felt like the actors were playing like the Rock Band equivalent of their drum parts on like medium or hard. Like there were certain notes taken out. Like there was, there's like a, on the hi-hat, there's like a ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. But the way they would play it was just ch-ch-ch-ch. They like wouldn't put those like little middle notes because that takes quite a bit more coordination and practice.
The little ghost notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I mean just like the smaller stuff, like 16th notes, mm-hmm, in there. They would just play straight eighths and you would hear the 16ths and you're like, oh, they're really smooth at those rebounds, just making them like not even look like they're stroking. Because, I mean, you can do that, but that's not what was happening.
Ryan, in addition to your question, you know, how the editing complementing the sounds, like say what you will about, you know, whether or not, you know, the drums were completely accurate in how they were depicted, I would say that the editing in the movie does such a great job to accentuate and, you know, complement what's going on, especially consider, like there was one part in particular, you know, especially the beginning, there's a cuts between, you know, the New York City skyline, and it's going along with the music. It's very cool. But one thing in particular that I really liked was a little later on in the movie, there was a point where Miles Teller is listening to Buddy Rich and he's obviously worshiping at the throne of him or something. And then it cuts, like, smash cuts to him just playing a kind of, I don't want to say easy, but, you know, slower song
in the very beginning.
Yeah, his intro class.
Yeah. And I think that was done to establish that this guy's better than this band is offering him.
Of course. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, though. The editing did such a good job at telling its own story.
Through the power of montage.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, I just wanted to make that point.
And I also felt that the cutting itself, you know, had a metaphorical, the editor for the film had a metaphorical drum kit in front of him.
Right.
And he would, you know, he would pick out different drums to hit at any given time. And he did such a great job of, or actually, I don't know who edited this, if it was a he or she.
The
They, he or she, did a great job of just keeping to the rhythm of the song and accentuating the just the right section of the band at the perfect time, or the perfect drum in the kit at the perfect time.
Well, yeah, especially in the performances, the like live competitive performances, I'd say, when the song was the king of what was going on.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite cuts of the entire movie was at the very end during the big 5-minute drum solo.
Mm-hmm.
I timed it. It was about 5 minutes.
Wow.
There's a part where the sound kind of fades out a little bit, and you see the cymbal being hit in slow motion and the droplets of sweat pouring off of it. And even though the song is still playing at full speed, you can hear in the background, but the cymbal is still being struck, you know, very slowly. And that's a part where the cutting doesn't really, you know, the acting doesn't match up with the music. With the music that you're hearing, the diegetic music. But I still thought it was incredibly effective, just that that shot.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic.
Another thing going along with that was I felt like whenever a song was most prominent in, say, reed instruments or brass instruments, they would usually cut to that section, which I thought was very smart. And I think, sound mixing played a part in that as well. But
the saxophones would play like a long legato, like lyrical flowing part, and the camera would do this kind of lazy glide down the saxophone section that just matches up perfectly. Mm-hmm. I love that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
I just love that entire last scene, like that last performance, because in the middle of the movie, or more towards the end of the movie, I was starting to wonder, like, you know how sometimes they say, who's the alter ego? Is it Superman or Clark Kent? Does Clark Kent turn it into Superman or vice versa?
Clark Kent is the alter ego.
Who's the real Fletcher? Is he in real, like, is he really a mean guy or just a guy who wants, or a guy who wants, does he become a mean guy to get the best out of people? Or is he a mean guy that occasionally turns, I mean, that seems like the first choice is the most obvious, or is he a mean guy that turns into the sometimes compassionate guy? Because whenever, I want to say
he's Lex Luthor.
He's Lex Luthor, but whenever he's compassionate, it's to get something. He's buddies up to Andrew, but then it's to get that bit about his mom that he can use against him. Then he buddies up to him in the jazz bar, but it's so he can sabotage his career at this big performance. So which do you think is the real one?
I think he's a guy, I think he's driven by just wanting to have that Buddy Rich. He wants that one great. He wants that amazing performance. But his methods are just, they're not welcomed in any environment. I can't imagine that being, like, me seeing that somewhere and just being okay with, like, well, but the results are...
Well, he's an ends justify the means sort of guy.
Which the ends never happen, he said. He said he never had a great, although where it's implied at the end of the movie that he's just found his great. Although I don't know how much of that you would credit to him versus Andrew. Because at first it kind of seems like Andrew sabotages the performance by playing the drums over his speech just to, like, oh, you want to ruin my career? Well, I'm going to mess you up. But then it becomes, oh, you know what? He just wants to redeem himself and show all these important people in the audience that I'm the best drummer you will ever see, which I think he does by the end of it. Because, I mean, J.K. Simmons is so – he curses a lot. And that's when you can tell that's his character. That's when he's in control. And he's like, what the F are you doing, man? No, he doesn't add man in there. But then, like, when he's, like, in the middle of his
and he doesn't
solo,
say F.
Actually, he does say man at one point. What are you doing,
man? I'm getting to that. In the middle of his drum solo, he comes over and he's really surprised. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, he's lost all control. He's out of his element. And then the scene progresses even further towards, like, all right, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to help you on this slowdown of the tempo that needs to be very specific. I'm going to help you, you know, speed it back up. And it seems Andrew Miles Teller's character is like transformed him into the mentor he should be. That's all right. Okay, let's slow down. Slow down. All right, that's good. That's good. He's like giving him encouraging gestures. Like, you're great. You're great. All right, now let's bring it up. Bring it up. Bring it up. And he completely does a 180. Mm-hmm. He makes J.K. Simmons do a 180 in that scene, and I love it.
But there's also the fact that he's on stage being watched, so he doesn't have a choice to be the character that he wants to be in that moment.
Oh, that's true.
He has a room full of people watching him, and he can't lash out.
But even in the whispering, he kind of like get he when he whispers.
I didn't get that from his performance anyway.
I agree with Steven that
you could see, you know, when he is on stage conducting, he's a very passionate person.
I get it from a performance aspect. Like I didn't necessarily see that in J.K. Simmons' portrayal of it. However, knowing what the rest of the movie has set me up to know about this character, there were a few choices at the end that I felt were very out of character. Knowing what this guy's priorities were, he would never put someone in a position to fail that badly on stage. Even if they got him fired from a job, his reputation is the most important thing to him.
I didn't get that at all. I got that the most important thing to him was finding his Charlie Parker.
His
reputation comes secondary to that.
But that was something he said during that scene that I think he was setting him up for failure. That could be him hey, I'm an okay guy. I just want the best for you.
I guess so, I like to think that there was truth in that speech.
That's a cool thing about the movie is it's layered. Like, I've been thinking about it all day, and I still don't have the answer. Like, it could really go either way.
Speaking of, Steven, you mentioned sabotage. The one thing that bothered me, especially about the first time when watching this movie, was where did the
folder go?
Oh yeah.
Did J.K. Simmons take it, or did it get lost? Did a janitor take it? I would say that the most probable is J.K. Simmons having taken it in hopes that Miles Teller would.
If I may, in my notes, Michael was showing his notes to the camera. I would argue that everything that happens in that movie was carefully orchestrated by J.K. Simmons, including...
Orchestrated.
You know,
Are we giving out points? Because I feel like I should give you a point for that.
I'll give myself a point for that. I'll give everyone 5 points Woo! For the discussion so far. You're leaving me ahead.
Even
at 6.
Field. Oh, wait, never mind.
You know, I wrote down in my notes here, I wouldn't put it past him that after Miles Teller's character got him fired, that he went around and played random nightclubs, random jazz clubs, waiting for Andrew to come in.
He's got
to
show up eventually.
I want to invite him to this thing so bad, but it's this Saturday. I got to figure out where he walks normally at night.
Well, he could have seen, maybe he saw where he worked as a deli guy and was just like, I'll play at the jazz club down the street.
What's funny is I actually wrote a note of like, because like, he even mentioned when, was it Sean Casey?
Yes. Yeah.
When Sean Casey died, he was talking about, oh, he was just this guy and I was outside his practice room. And it just gave me this image, like, especially, it's funny with you saying like the idea of him going from nightclub to nightclub. I picture all the stuff that we're not seeing him do, like just creeping in and stealing a folder, just like waiting for someone to start playing outside of a practice room.
We can,
like,
have
creeping
the,
like crazy.
We can have the Ender's shadow cut to Whiplash's Ender's Game, where we see the whole thing from J.K. Simmons' perspective.
And it's just a lot of tiptoeing. He kept mentioning Charlie Parker, and I kept expecting him to say Peter Parker accidentally. And just be like, give me pictures of Spider-Man! Ah.
That's why he was so mad throughout the whole movie. Spider-Man's a menace.
Yeah, it was New York. It could be his night job as the music conservatorium guy. Conservatory.
So we were talking about Superman and alter egos earlier, and I just want to briefly mention Melissa Benoist, who plays Nicole in this movie, is going to be our Supergirl in the upcoming CBS show, Supergirl.
I did not know that.
I love CBS. It's my favorite channel. Oh, yeah? They have the best shows. 2 and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory.
Two and a Half Men's not on anymore.
Well, they're the best shows.
Of all time.
They're so quality.
You're saying of all time.
They're so quality, and I'm sincere right now.
Or is not sponsored by CBS.
But I kind of wanted to touch on the lack of the romance, a real female character in this movie.
I was thinking about Moneyball on the way here because we have the exact same thing. We have one female character and a very poorly done romance plot. It just happens.
I even made the note that the scene where he asks her out and the scene where they are at dinner are probably my two favorite scenes in the movie. They are so incredibly charming. Well, not the...
I think I said Moneyball.
I like them a lot. They're so charming to me. They make
think,
you
I think you
like
could
this.
Cut them out from the movie.
Yeah. In themselves, yeah. And by the way, I think I meant Wall Street, not Moneyball. Yeah, it's kind of funny. They have a quirky way that he asks around. She goes, go away, please. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. But yeah, like, they don't add much to the movie. Even like the whole, oh, I have a boyfriend now. That doesn't play into his performance at all.
I don't know. I mean, like, I think it just it's part of the whole you can't have it all. You can't be the greatest and also, you know.
Yeah, I think it did fit with the theme of sacrifice.
So I do agree with that. But just specifically what I want to mention is that there's no real female character in this movie. And I want to draw the comparison. Michael, you just watched Hannibal recently.
Okay.
Where it really is kind of a showdown among Will and Hannibal and Jack.
Yeah.
And they are the three main characters, and the show is very much about how the three of them interact with each other. And then you have these, a few female characters on
kind
the periphery.
Kind of tertiary,
Nicole's character in Whiplash is not a real character. It is only meant to show another side of Andrew, our main character.
Yeah. Right, so she's a plot device.
Yeah, she's there to show up and then be taken away. Not really taken away, for him to get rid of. Yeah, to show his character and show his determination for, I really want this.
And I think that's sad.
Yeah. Sad, like, for him or sad, like,
sad
for the quality
of
the movie?
Sad about the way the movie was written.
Yeah.
That it has that problem.
Yeah, it was, like, a weird flaw. It was, like, it just didn't... She never showed...
Melissa Benoist does a great job with what she's given, I think. She's very charming, like Michael said.
But there was no, like, oh, I see why he's really into her. It was just, oh, she's the...
cute girl at the counter of the theater.
Guys, speaking of charming, can we talk about our favorite character of the entire movie?
The dad?
Connolly?
Brian Connolly?
For those of you who might not remember, Connolly was actually the...
What? They don't remember?
was the,
what movie were they watching?
Was the redheaded guy who Michael or Miles was turning pages for at the very beginning of the movie, comes in later.
Before he even went to...
Simmons, Fletcher's class.
Yeah. Right after he becomes core, Connolly comes in. He's like, sorry, am I late? And we're like, yes, it's Connolly. He's just like the most lovable puppy dog faced guy in the entire movie.
He seems to be totally oblivious to what's going on.
And then after the car crash, he's like, I'm giving your part to Connolly. And he's Andrew is just... flailing obscenities at Connolly. I was like, don't do it to Connolly. What did he do to you? He's just trying to play. He's getting by.
I think instead of we see this from J.K. Simmons' perspective, I think we should see this from Connolly's perspective, where he's just floating through school and is super talented and he's like, got friends and shit. I think that would be a great
He's like
movie.
The one guy in there who
no
has
conflict.
Friends.
No conflict at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, not really, no.
Except for maybe that one scene where Miles Teller is
comes in all bloody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh dude, are you okay? I'm sorry.
Shut up, man.
So I had two very quick technical issues based on drumming from this movie. One, if you get blisters to the point that your hand is like falling off, you don't keep playing. I don't care how determined you are.
You're gonna injure your hand for longer, it seems
I had issues with like flirting with carpal tunnel syndrome when I was drumming for a while, and what you do is
you come to my wrists often.
Did you guys ever go out?
Was it serious?
And you stop playing for a little bit, and it kind of heals itself. The only time I got blisters are from holding the left hand with traditional grip, which is the grip that he uses to hit the snare drum, because you develop a callus on your ring finger where the stick rests. And then when I was playing four mallet marimba, I got one on the outside of my middle finger. Mm-hmm. And they become calluses pretty quickly. And then regardless of how long you play, they never really like open back up or become a problem again. You would think that if this guy's practiced this much, he would be over that level of intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other note is play at 2:15. What's the tempo? play 215 for me. Drummer, you don't memorize a tempo number to the, like, to the digit. Maybe the ones that are, like, centered around, like, the second, like, you know, quarter note equals 60, 90, 120, 180,
right,
240, stuff like that. But, like, I don't know.
It's never that precise.
There were technical details where I was, like, rolling my eyes. And to most audience that this movie finds, they're never going to notice it. They're just going to be like, oh, that's what music school is like. And they'll be like, yeah, people do that.
Well, I think in the way that it's delivered, it's meant to show the anxiety, just throwing a bunch of numbers that the audience wouldn't even understand. Just like,
hey, fine art student, do math.
Quarter note equals pi.
play pi. Play tempo of pi. What?
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's just meant to, like, it's meant to heighten the anxiety, the amount of information that you're trying to digest at that time, and especially for this person on screen. You know.
I feel there may have been better ways to do that using better facts.
Mm-hmm.
But small details like that took away from the movie.
Play me a pair of diddle, 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 diddle.
Also, I've heard J.K. Simmons on TV shows that he's acted in is exactly like his character in this movie and throws tantrums at writers and stuff like that.
I've heard he's kind of an asshole.
I did an improv class with someone who was a PA on a show he worked on, and they were like, yeah, he would come in and instead of throwing stools and chairs, he would just throw scripts at writers but say the exact kind of stuff. I was like, well, that takes away a little bit of my appreciation.
Casting. Yeah,
it's great casting, but less acting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be excited to meet him then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard from somebody that worked with him the same thing.
Yeah.
In fact, tried to get the guy fired. So you could imagine there'd be a little bit of bad blood.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but what are you going to do?
Well, what do you say we rate it?
I say we do.
Ratings.
On tempo.
Ratings?
Ratings.
Let's do it.
Ratings.
Who would like to go first?
I guess I'll start.
Do it to it, bro.
Like I said, I saw this in the theater the first time and was literally on the edge of my seat for pretty much the entirety of the movie. And at the end, the entire ending solo, I just found it hard to catch my breath. I was having an intense emotional reaction to this movie that I haven't felt about any movie in quite a long time. And it was, you know, I'm very much passionate about music, of course, but in addition to the story it was telling, it was just almost too much for me. And I think just based on, in my memory, that experience alone, I'm going to give it an A+.
Get a room.
I'd like to go next, if that's all right. Yeah, I agree. I unfortunately wasn't able to watch this in theaters when it first came out, but regardless of the screen that I was watching it on, I was also very much on the edge of my seat. In fact, I felt like a heightened heart rate, especially the last act, the last scene. I had to watch the last scene twice because it was that amazing. And I'll describe it the way that I had described it to pretty much everybody that asked me about it. It's like a 2-hour anxiety attack, but in a good way, you know? So with that, I would also like to give it an A+. It was one of my favorite movies of last year.
My heart was beating really fast during that last scene too, faster than any scene where Simmons was yelling at Miles Teller's character. But I mean, all the good things we've said, I guess I had a couple other faults. We mentioned the romance subplot. It also had a weird, I thought the movie was going to end much sooner where he tells the lawyer, just tell me what to say. And I thought, oh, I guess that could be an ending where he's decided to look out for himself and not his weird hard dream. But then it kept going. That felt a little disjointed to me. So I guess overall I'd have to give it an A-.
Heresy.
Heresy.
All right. I liked this movie more on my first viewing than my second. But even then, most of my opinions that I've solidified on my second viewing, I kind of had in like the days after my first viewing, the kind of thoughts that came to me. I was like, oh, well, this didn't really like me. And I got most of my points out there. But there were just little things that bugged me. I think it is very good acting. I think it is, in the case of some characters, very good character development. The way it's shot is beautiful. The way it's edited is wonderful. But for me personally, this movie is a B.
Whoa. Really?
So where does that leave us?
While he does that, I had a one more closing thought. I really wanted Andrew to, at the end of his solo, get up and like tell Fletcher, tell me good job, because he said he would never say that, but he felt like he earned it, especially with how Fletcher's character turned, which of course the movie doesn't end that way. But right after the movie ended, I checked my email, and my boss sent me like a response on a script I'd sent in, and he was like, yeah, no, we're gonna go ahead and move on and produce this script, good job. And so I felt like
never
I felt like
say that.
I felt like I took all of like Andrew's hardships and I took them, and I was like, yes, I got it. Even though my boss is very encouraging all the time,
you can relate to him.
Yeah.
Our rating is exactly the halfway point between an A- and an A, so we'll round up and say it's an A.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Excellent. Congrats, Whiplash. I know you didn't win Best Picture.
Hey, but you got our A.
But
yeah. Forget the Oscars. You got a
yeah.
Foire.
You won only the award that matters. The Foire A.
Foire.
We should get together and have a foire sometime.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Foire.
A four-word ceremony. Yes.
Oh, man.
Best of four.
I did really love... I actually was very happy that Birdman won this year, too.
Me, too.
That movie was... We've all seen that, right?
Nope.
Maybe we'll pick. Maybe we'll pick that for another time. But for now, let's move on to the
challenge. Not my tempo.
And what is that challenge?
Talk amongst yourself for just a moment.
Oh, okay. Ryan is getting up from the table, and
they can see this.
Walking,
just everybody right
walking
now.
Walking away?
In your browser. Go to youtube.com/hyperdrivepics, and you can see Ryan. Yeah. What is that, a waltz? Kick?
Considering you're showing him from the waist up, I don't think it matters what his feet are doing. But now he's hiding as though he's kind of...
I don't think he's coming back, honestly.
He's
I think
hiding
we're on
like
our
he
own.
Has a secret.
So...
Uh-oh. I see a drum and some drumsticks... And he's bringing it back to the
table.
This
is going to sound really bad on the table.
We can put it in our laps or something.
What I have is Michael's practice pad and drumsticks. I am giving it to James first.
Okay.
And the objective is simple.
Double time swing.
Oh.
The objective is simple. Find my tempo.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm gonna have it on
I'm
my lap
so,
here
so
that... So that it doesn't get on the table.
Let's hear it, James.
Are you going to cue me?
Just go, I
nope,
think.
You got to find my tempo.
So we're basically okay. Doing a musical equivalent of Guess the Number.
Yeah, essentially. Okay.
Not my tempo.
Okay. Do I have to pass it on? Or no, just...
you give it another shot. Give it another shot. Because you're the first one. I'll give you another shot. You're rushing. You're rushing.
You're also hitting sticks together. Come on, some technique, bro.
You're really rushing now.
So I'm going fast.
Also, the objective is to find the tempo, but you know, I'd like to
enjoy
for you to have
what
some
you're
style.
Hearing.
I'd like you to put a little style into it. Put a little bit of effort into it. Steven, why don't you go next?
I'd like to preface with how little I believe in myself, because I can't even do Rock Band drums.
Hey, do you want me to hold the pad for you?
I would love that.
Hold it on your face.
How do I hold this?
See, you're not confident. I'm not confident you're not going to hit my hand.
Should I hold?
That's
like,
not
is this
a way to hold?
Like this.
Like chopsticks?
You know what? As long as you find the tempo, you can...
That's the important part, Steven.
I'm going to hold like so.
Which one's your left hand?
The other one. So, I'm getting some tips from a pro here.
You should go there.
That's not
you
fair.
That close there.
Okay.
This one, you actually hold like that.
Ah, I see.
A little bit more. There you go.
This is going to make me worse.
Okay.
Let me think of what James's was. And is that anything?
That's not my tempo.
Okay. Do I get one more shot?
Sure.
Okay.
That's like the same tempo as last time.
This is why I wouldn't last in this conservatory. Michael, please. Michael, I think you're just going to win this. Man.
You're rushing just a hair. No, you're rushing.
What song is that? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I don't know.
M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E.
Dragging. Rushing.
I think the goal of this challenge is we don't win.
Ryan, you know. So what was you play your tempo?
I will show you my tempo.
Okay.
For one thing, you guys, my tempo changes halfway through. And none of you guessed that.
Tempo oh, change. Damn.
Okay, so here's my tempo.
Can I just say one thing? Your delts looked terrible. You looked like a turtle. You looked so tense. And my enjoyment went up because I actually worked my delts a little. We're sitting at like a 7.5 for my enjoyment of this podcast okay, right now. Okay. I just want to make sure you're okay.
I was hoping we would be at least an 8 by now, but I'll take what I can get.
Depends on the results of this challenge, bro.
As a matter of fact, the closest to my tempo was... not Steven, who earns 2 points for effort.
So I'm at a 7.
It was not Michael, who earns 4 points for just, you know, technique, being on point. It was, in fact, James, who earns 6 points.
And I only needed 2 chances to do it.
That's right.
I guess that's why I got closest to the change of tempo. because I averaged. All right.
Sorry, where does that leave us on the point totals?
Juby wins.
Juby wins! Yeah!
With Juby McNoodles.
man, we got way too many. That's you're throwing too many nicknames at me. I gotta stop you right there. So my pick for next week is, I had 2.
You can only pick one.
I'm
pick
aware.
Pick the one on the left.
Okay. The one on the left is going to be Blazing Saddles.
Have not seen it.
I know. And that's why I picked it.
And Ryan and I have seen it.
I actually can't remember what the other one was.
I have seen it. I can speak for myself.
And Ryan has seen it too.
I honestly couldn't remember what the other one was, but I know it was something good.
Okay, cool.
Do you have a specific question our audience should answer if they've seen the movie or are going to see it beforehand and chime in?
No.
Can you come up with one on the spot?
I can come up with one on the spot.
Or so we can write one in the description.
For example, Stephen, I gave you a question. And you right. posted it on the Hyperdrive right. Facebook page.
The question was, who is your buddy Rich? Who inspires you to improve or be greater? I got one response. And full disclosure, this was my sister. Although I didn't bug her to be like, hey, go. She responded on her own. But being my sister, she responded, my buddy Rich is a potato because it teaches me that I want to be the very best like no one ever was. To train, catch them is my real test. To train them is my cause. She just went into the Pokemon theme song, but Katie, thank you for writing in.
Thanks.
And you guys should write in.
For this question.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/HyperdrivePicks. HyperdrivePicks. You can write us in at fuarock@gmail.com. Like Treary Parker did.
Treary.
I think Charlie Parker wrote into us here.
But
spelled
but
his name
got in
wrong.
An accident beforehand.
Treary says, your assistance is needed in a charity transaction. Interested, get back to me.
Oh, that sounds pretty important.
Yeah, I think we should look into that.
Was Charlie Parker
big
a charitable guy?
Yeah.
I guess so. Okay, so I come up with a question for you. So for you listeners who have seen Blazing Saddles, as you probably know,
or you can watch it
and answer right after.
But Blazing Saddles is a movie that was very offensive in a lot of ways.
No, it's not.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very tame movie. But especially for the time, it was very out there. It was very open about it. And it wasn't like offensive in a hurtful way. It was offensive in a funny, in a humorous way. So I want to ask you, viewers, what is your favorite dirty joke? So write us in.
I like it.
Yeah.
You can give us some ideas, and we'll read them out loud or whatever.
You can email it. You can post it. Did you say the Twitter?
I did not. What is our Twitter?
FUA Rock Podcast. And then if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're watching the video, just leave it in the comments too. We can find it there. So comment right below.
Cool. Sounds good.
Excellent. Well, I think that's going to do it for this welcome back edition of From Under a Rock. Let's go around the table for one last roll call.
I am James McNally, a.k.a. McDoodles.
I'm Steven Zarita, a.k.a. Steven Steuben Suburban, the Burb Zarita, the Jerk.
I think you said it a little out of order.
Oh.
Not my tempo.
Not.
How many times can we say not my tempo in one podcast?
I don't know. Write us in. Count. I'm Mike Lornelis, a.k.a. Mike Bourbon.
And I'm Ryan Evans, a.k.a. NP Ryan Evans. Thank you once again for joining us for another episode of
From Under a Rock.
I'm touching myself under the table, but like over my shorts. Rock.
Oh, okay.
At least you're not touching me anymore.
It's a scratch. It's not for pleasure.
It's not for pleasure. It's just a scratch. It's not a pleasure. It's just a scratch. Not for pleasure. It's just a scratch. It's not for pleasure. It's just a scratch. It's not for pleasure. It's just a scratch. It's not for pleasure. It's just a scratch.
Slap him harder.
It actually took me a really long time to figure out the words that you were just singing. Like, I wasn't listening. I was so focused. And then I was like, wait, he's talking about my nut scratch.
I forgot about... Oh, well. I forgot the real story I was going to say because someone reminded me of Gwen Stefani. Guys, are you still recording? Are you still recording?
Next time.
Oh, okay, next time.